Hey friends, welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. This is episode 5050.
This is it. I am matched with our episode number, you guys. This is so exciting.
Oh, for January 25th, 2016, my name is Ben. That very excitable person over there is Mr. Cole Hornaday.
And Cole is 50. Did you know Cole is 50? Cole is 50.
All right, we also have Nicole Lamb.
Hi, I'm Nicole. I'm 32. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Nicole.
Wow.
And, of course...
You just went there, like, immediately, didn't you?
And... Well, hey, Chris, how's it going?
I don't have a cell phone.
I'm a little Chris Casso who lives in the 19th century.
All right. So, how is everybody doing this fine evening?
Good.
Well, apparently we're super duper punchy.
We are kind of punchy.
Can it's, you tell what time of the night late. This is?
All right, so let's just get rolling. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about events and how, Chris, you were getting tired of the nonstop events. And my question is, so this is another Explain to Ben moment. My question is, what the heck is an event? And right. How does it differ from like a regular story arc?
Right. So there's two different ways an event can happen. You can have an event within a normal comic. Like used to be comics could be done in one issue. You know, Spider-Man went and fought the Green Goblin, whoop-de-doo, we're done. Maybe a two-parter, but then they're like, oh, now it's like a six-part story, which is now the norm. But that could be an event. Something big really happened. All the villains teamed up, whatever. And now an event is usually a separate book, like the Civil War that you read.
Right.
And it's a team-up with lots of characters, you know, and it could be a small tone story where maybe there's a murder mystery that they all have to solve, or like there was one called Identity Crisis that did that, or it's something big like the Civil War where everybody beats each other up, or the Secret War. And then because everything has to be bigger and bigger as we go on, you'll have that main event, but then if you're reading Civil War, well, you got to go read Amazing Spider-Man for 3 issues because it's got a Civil War little tag on it. Or you got to go read the X-Men because it's the X-Men Civil War 3-issue miniseries. Mm-hmm. So events now mean these big, huge, sprawling, all-inclusive events that suck everything into it like a black hole.
And tell us how you really feel.
The comics that they're all crossing over, interlacing, and you have to have a spreadsheet.
Yep. And editors make sure that the writers are like, well, you have to have this. So if you're writing Miss Marvel, sorry, Juella Wilson, but she's going to have to talk about how the Secret War is affecting her.
Yep.
Right.
And sometimes they'll be lenient, and writers have time to figure something out and make it work. As an example, Miss Marvel really did so. It was actually the opposite of a crossover story where she was dealing it with the normal person's point of view of like, well, the world is ending. There's a giant planet about to crush New Jersey. Let's have a family moment, you know, and that's great.
They take the community to the high school gym where we're safe, and who's going to be distributing the water and the food,
and she finds all these thugs, and they're like, you could be doing better stuff. We're all about to die, and so like even the bad like thugs are like helping out. So like that's sometimes people are clever with it, and then sometimes people are bitter about it. I remember one stupid event where it was called "In This Issue, Batman Dies," and all the DC Comics had to say that. And like, so an issue detective would say that, and like the Penguin dreamed up murdering Batman. So Chuck Dixon had to do that in Birds of Prey, and he's like, I don't want to interrupt my story. And they're like, well, tough luck. You've got to find a way to do this. So in the middle of the story that had nothing to do with Batman, if you look on like the bottom left panel of this, like they're in the Himalayas and they're running away from Ra's al Ghul, there's a Yeti who's just like rips off Batman's head in like the bottom panel. And you're like, well, I covered what I had to do.
My contractual obligation is complete. How infuriating.
But so events are now these giant just sources of money for events, for companies, because they figure completists are just like, well, okay, I guess to find out what happens in Civil War, I got to go read Spider-Man.
That would definitely get me.
Yes.
It's a turnoff.
Yeah. And like upcoming now, Marvel's going to have a Apocalypse event because Apocalypse is in the next X-Men movie.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 ongoing X-Men titles, Extraordinary X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, and All New X-Men, are going to be a part of the event. because there's a version of Apocalypse showing up in each one, and who's the real Apocalypse? Which actually sounds like a fun game show.
Is it behind door number one?
And sometimes there's smaller events that Chris had alluded to in the beginning. And there's like the right now there's the Vader Down stuff that's rounding out. So Star Wars and Darth Vader had their own paths and now they're intersecting. So they're telling stories together. So this Star Wars has part one and Darth Vader has part two. I'm kind of enjoying that.
That's a mode I like because like they did that with Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps. It's like, well, those two books should meet each other. But they did it with Batman a little while ago where it's like Batman Year Zero, flashing back, and it's like you included Green Lantern and Flash, and all of this is happening in Gotham. Why? So that was a money grab.
You know? I mean, even Marvel will do small little snippets like that where they will combine two titles and tell a story, and then it'll go back to different story arcs after the fact. And those are fun. Those are the kind of crossovers that I will buy into because they're. They're the simpler ones.
They're
not the all-encompassing, buy 20 issues a month to get all the story, even though it's not even necessary most of the time.
Ultimately, they fatigue the crap out of your readers. And they fatigue me to the point where when an event or a crossover comes up, I do not bother.
You step out.
I step out. For Secret Wars, I got enticed back because there were enough things in it that I thought were well done. I liked the core. The core series, and I was okay with it being extended, and you know I didn't have a problem with that because I thought it was fun. And I did actually, and I'm sorry they beat me because I actually started picking up. I picked up a lot of new Marvel books post Secret Wars. I have lost. I have succumbed because I was that guy that was like, no, I'm gonna, I need to be start weeding them out and.
See, and Ben, you even just look fatigued just hearing about this. So,
I gotta say, man.
It's
man,
intense.
Secret Wars is still not over.
Nope.
It started in May.
And
I'm still
and
here.
The main series and the main series are back on track and they still haven't finished the core story yet.
Right. So it's like I guess everybody made it out okay.
I guess so. There are gonna be
spoilers.
issue nine comes out, which we knew.
But it's still like okay, whatever.
So when issue nine comes out, what in the summertime?
Don't even joke to me about that.
Because it was originally supposed to be what, 5-6 issues and then extended to 8 and then extended to 9. You know, actually it's gonna extend to 12.
Yes.
Right?
No.
And it's gonna take it to the summer.
Cole,
so to answer your question.
I'm sorry.
Originally, an event
causing you such pain. Sorry, Chris.
To answer your question, originally an event was supposed to give a sense of a shared continuity and a community among the characters.
Yeah.
Now it is just flat out a money grab.
Okay.
That's it.
All right.
I wish I could say that's me being completely cynical, and maybe it mostly is, but I've now written basically a small novel's worth of reviews about all these events.
You should publish that in a novel form.
Dude, that's epic.
So, yeah.
All right.
I'm sorry. I got to go back and give kudos to Chris because I forget that his level of commitment with his trusty henchman reviews of all this stuff. It's just, you know.
Thank you.
The man doesn't sleep, people. He doesn't sleep. He eats caterpillars. He sits in the corner of his room in his underwear writing reviews.
Okay, what? This got really weird. I don't think any of these things happened except
for the protein.
Okay.
Maybe the corner of the room part, but I don't know about any of the other parts.
With his all laptop.
So let's say,
writing a fan fiction about me?
And then you're going to have to write a review on that fan fiction.
Oh, what fresh hell is this?
Welcome.
Ben and I are writing the useless crossover parts of it that you have to buy anyway because they're not relevant.
Are there variant covers?
Ben Lord's doing his very best to get
Are there variant covers
to this? Sorry, go ahead, Ben.
All right, so let's say that you are a completist like I am and somebody has an event and you have to buy all of these comics to complete the event. You have a fantastic comic collection now.
That's one way to say it.
You have a fantastically large comic collection. Yeah. Now, I come from the baseball card collecting world, and there are certain ways to store and keep your baseball cards. And some people say you shouldn't store them upright, like stacked vertically, because the gravity over time will bend them, and so you should store them flat on top of each other. But then other people say that will cause the gravity will cause the cards to stick to each other, thereby ruining them. There's no right way, unless you want to individually package each card into a plastic sleeve and have it graded. For as many cards that I have, that's not physically possible. So, if you have a comic collection, what's the best way to maintain that? What's the best way to store it?
It depends on your level of caring.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you could mangle them and love them dearly, and that could be one way.
Well, should you put
in a pile
like
a, in the corner?
should you put every comic you own in a sleeve and board?
Yeah, if you are a collector and you want to protect them, yes. And you should actually replace the bag and the board like roughly every 10 or 15 years because they start to turn yellow. Yeah. We get collections that look horrendous because they just look like they're soiled.
Yeah.
And then the moment you strip them out of the bag and board, it's like rebirth, you know?
And sometimes those backing boards actually have an imprint of the whatever ad was on the back too. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's like silly putty.
Yeah, you know, it's so bagging and boarding, putting them in a box. The box protects them from flooding and moisture. You know, you want to keep it in a generally kind of dry environment. You don't want to put it in like the coldest, dampest place in the house or apartment or whatever.
Yeah, and
you know, putting them upright makes a certain amount of sense because if you stack things, the weight on those will actually start to bow them in weird directions after time. One thing that we talked about before recording this is that currently for the past year or so, Marvel Comics are using a really crappy ink and paper stock, and it bleeds when you put it in a bag and board and then you take your comic out. It's now scuffed the back ink of the cover onto the board, and your comic is actually damaged now. So for variant covers from Marvel, when we get them in, I put it in a bag, and then I put the bag in a bag and a board. Now, that sounds really OCD and horrible, but if I'm charging you $100 for a book, I bet you want that book to be as nice-looking as it can be.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I was so happy to hear about this because I thought it was just my, you know, swampy, oily constitution that my Marvel comic books were smudging when I'm barely touching them.
Well, I'm sure that's part of it.
Well, yeah.
Now, sometimes the paper and the inks do react to people's personal body chemistry and you know, like you said, like the salts and whatever.
But it's never been so consistent.
No, this is consistent. I've had a lot of customers talk about this, and like I was reading this Marvel comic for 10 minutes and the ink came off in my hands. And
yeah,
it happens.
You can't hold a comic anymore.
Yeah. And it happens to some Image comics from time to time. The I Hate Fairyland, that was a common problem. And there's been some Marvel comics recently, like the first issue of the new relaunch of the Mighty Thor. Different coating. That won't bleed.
That one is more of like a glossy.
Kind of a gloss, yeah.
Sort of finish.
Generally, DC comics won't bleed.
Yeah, because they're a harder stock of paper, a firmer stock of paper, and they're usually a glossy.
Yeah.
So they'll get thumbprints on them and stuff, but you can wipe them off.
Yeah.
Is Marvel aware of
it?
Who
have
knows?
To be.
Is this happening?
I just don't know if they care. Yeah. It'd be weird if they didn't, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just relieved. Know if they didn't care.
I'm just relieved that it's not just me. I mean, seriously. Good grief.
So, yeah, taking care of comics, comes down to the specifics of how much you care.
Yeah.
But you do have to take these things into account. Like, you have to sometimes look at the paper stock of your comic and be like, oh, how's this going to survive?
Yeah. My husband collects silver and mostly Bronze Age stuff, and so he will always bag and board them and that sort of thing. And the cardboard boxes, I've actually heard when people, for whatever reason, store them in their basement and there's a flood, it actually has
saved them
between the
cardboard boxes.
Yeah, yes. Because they're multiple layered.
Yeah.
So the water doesn't get in quickly, and then you also have them in bags.
Right.
And so then that also helps.
Right.
So it works.
If you could get it out of the water fast enough, the second layer of the box will protect it for a few hours at least.
Yeah.
Maybe a day or something.
So Did I tell you guys the story about when I was in Wisconsin, and I was in the house that had the fire, it was an old manor. I always called it a manor house, but it was like a two story house that had been converted into apartments. And there was alcoholic personality that lived upstairs, and her boyfriend set the couch on fire in the middle of the night, and it just demolished the apartment. But there was a severe water damage in my apartment that I was living with my girlfriend at the time, but I had my entire collection in a closet. I had like 30 boxes, and
that's a big closet.
Closet
we also called the living room.
I had stacked, you know, floor to ceiling in there, and you know, they wouldn't let us go back in the house after we evacuated for like 48 hours, and I'm like, we had no idea if we had any belongings, and my landlord is standing there as I'm hauling these boxes, these soaking wet boxes, and they are disintegrating. I did not lose one comic book because every blasted one of them was in a bag.
Yeah.
But the cardboard just disintegrated all over the place. Yeah. That was, I thought, wow, I am the poster child for
comic storage by Cole Hornaday.
Every single one.
I should have gotten a scholarship. Yeah. No, I lost maybe two or three that were like golden age size that I didn't have bags for. But I mean, we're talking hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comic books.
Pretty good average here.
I'm not gonna gripe about it. Yeah. I did not gripe. I thanked the gods of geekdom.
Thank them, Mick.
There are different kinds of boxes now too. There's plastic boxes, and they're handy. They're just expensive, and they're not good in as far as long boxes go because they bow in the middle.
Yeah, I've seen those over here. Yeah,
they're corrugated plastic.
Yeah, corrugated plastic. But if you get the short ones, those are great.
Yeah.
And so that takes a little extra damage. And you know, you could get resealable bags, and those are handy. And blah blah blah. So you have a lot of options. There's even boxes for like graded comics, and so
Those tend to be taller because of the plastic on them. Yeah,
you know.
They're permanently sealed.
And then if you like if you have older comics, like when we said golden, silver, bronze, like the golden ones are wider. Or if you have magazines, like if you're a collector of whatever magazine, there's boxes for those as well. So whatever you collect, BCW is what we use, and they seem to have boxes for everything. Yeah. I'm sure they have boxes for you.
The
for
storage industry is a whole industry.
Exactly. Yeah. And it works. It pays. I mean, if you want to keep your comics in any sort of nice condition, it doesn't cost very much to do it.
Yeah. It might even help with like your insurance. Like if you're trying to like make your claims and all that, and you're telling them like, "Hey, I protected them."
Exactly.
That must have been a hell of a fire or something. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
The plastic melted on them.
Yeah.
So yeah.
All right. Well, let's hope your collection doesn't get trapped in a fire. All right. So cool. Hey, let's move on to book report, everybody. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'm gonna go first.
Yay!
I haven't read a book. I haven't read a comic in a while. And in fact, I just read this while I was waiting for the store to close today. just standing around.
He is a speedy reader.
It's Rick and Morty from issue number 8 from Oni Press. Now, I got to say, Rick and Morty is one of my favorite shows on TV. And
why?
It makes me laugh. It's funny. The characterizations are great. It's also dirty. So kids, don't watch Rick and Morty. It's on Adult Swim.
And it's also really dark.
It's very dark.
Super duper dark.
It's very dark. But it's one of those shows where the protagonists are also like antagonists in a certain way. But at the end of the day, they also have a redeeming quality. They really care about each other. Like Rick really cares about Morty, even though Morty hides Rick in his. Anyway, watch the show.
He also needs Morty.
Yeah, he needs Morty as a shield.
They're a symbiotic relationship. Yeah.
So I just picked up Rick and Morty off the shelf here, and it's issue number 8. It's like a Christmas issue where they go to this dimension, and there's this version of Christmas and version of Santa Claus. Little version of Scrooge, and I gotta tell you, I mean, it was great. I don't know if the writers on the show actually write for the comic, but you know, they have some of the mannerisms down, they have some of the speech patterns. Rick, they write in Rick's burps, and they write in Morty has his saying, "Oh, geez, Rick," and so, but the thing about it is, I just it's. It didn't make me laugh. I don't know if I even cracked a smile reading it.
Okay.
But the cartoon busts me up. And I think it's because of the performances. I think it's because
voice actors matter.
Justin Roiland, who does the voice of both Rick and Morty, just goes to 12 when he performs these characters. And
bypasses 11 straight to 12.
Exactly. And so I don't know if I will read anymore.
Okay.
Interesting. Well, I haven't heard any feedback on the Rick and Morty comics, so it's good to hear something.
Yeah.
Because it does make a difference.
It's decent. The art's good. I mean, it's not very complicated. It's not a very complicated artistic cartoon to begin with, so it's not hard to replicate that. Yeah. Yes. Rick and Morty, whatever. Whatever.
It's very concise.
All right. Cole Hornaday, what about you, sir?
I I read Marvel's new take on the Vision. I read issues 1 and 2. It's written by Tom King and drawn by Gabriel Hernandez Walta. And I am super duper excited about this book. It's not a superhero story, per se. I think it's a good science fiction story, and I think it's a good sci-fi drama thus far. So the Vision now lives in suburbia. He's a consultant to the White House, and he is essentially, you know, creating his own little Eden. I got really biblical when I was reading this in my interpretation, because he has crafted his own wife and his two twin children, and they're basically taken, they're you know, they're all synthesoids, they're all artificial human beings, and they're all based on his programming, and he built them. So you know, the kids are going to school, the wife is trying to be the happy homemaker, interacting with the neighbors, and you know, they're trying to figure out who they are based on the fact that they're pre-programmed identities, and also, you know, explore their own autonomy and individuality. And then the Plunderer shows up, and Mom kills this bad guy to protect her family, and then hides it from her husband and the neighbors. And so it's this weird sci-fi domestic drama, and I am really excited about it. The artwork is marvelous. The characterizations are really well inscribed. You know, in a lot of ways, we're not exploring anything new where synthetic peoples are concerned in science fiction. You know, there's tropes of Blade Runner, there's Asimov's, you know, iRobot, there's in particular the stuff that Data and Lore explored in Star Trek: The Next Generation. But for some reason, there's something new going on here that I'm really enjoying. So I recommend it.
Cool. What's the title again?
This is The Vision.
The Vision.
Who we met in the Avengers movie.
Oh,
who's
yes,
been, you know, a longtime Avenger himself in the comic book.
All right, great. Nicole, what about you?
I read a comic that is actually scheduled to come out in March.
What?
Wait, what?
You got an advance copy?
Jeezy peasy.
And so I wanted to talk about it so that if you want to order it through Comic Extension.
You have to talk about it in hushed tones?
I know. It's a Oni Press.
This is on the down low?
It's called Another Castle, and it's written by Andrew Wheeler and drawn by Paulina. Oh, why do I always get these names? Ganucho. Ganucho.
Anyway, Ganucho.
Ganucho.
It looks Flange. You think it's Flange? I think it's Flange.
I will only read stories from people who at least
Romanian.
Have one complicated last name. So this goes under the genre of princesses who don't want a princess.
Got it.
And that's like
they've
princeless.
Forgotten how to princess. Or,
they don't want to. They can, but they'd be phoning it in. So like princeless, or like I think courageous princess would probably fit into that, that kind of thing. So she's, you know, supposed to be pretty, and she's supposed to get married to the prince, but the prince is just this kind of like placeholder guy.
Mm-hmm.
Not really interesting. She can fight better than him. She gets captured by the big bad guy. And while it's sort of following this formulaic, you know, princesses who don't want a princess kind of become more warrior princess, it takes a turn in that, you know, what actually happens at the bad castle? You know, like, how are the people there treated? And, you know, are they actually there because they want to be there? Or are they also under, like, the thumb of, you know, the big bad?
Do they hang their tapestries in an evil way?
Exactly. Or, you know, do they like to, you know, bake apple pie sometimes, you know, and then enjoy a nice aroma? I don't know. Mm. I just, it's at the end of the night. I'm reaching a straw here. So,
you're doing all right.
So it does a little spin on the story. So it's not just your normal, like, princess trying to rebel, has to escape, has to save the day. It's also like, what about these other characters in the kingdom land? You know, like, what's their life like? And so I thought that was really interesting. And I would definitely recommend checking it out. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Chris Casso, what about you, sir?
I read The Private Eye by Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin. And to give some context to this, this was an experiment that they did where they published it online as a digital comic, chapter by chapter, and you could pay what you would. You could pay a penny, you could pay $20 per chapter. Cool. And it was a success. They won the Eisner Award for Best Digital Comic, and When you read it, you could see why. Now, you can still go online and I think buy them for whatever you want to. This is a super nice hardcover published by Image, and it's for $50. But it's a very, very rewarding package.
Tell us about the way that the binding is done?
It's widescreen. Yeah. Would be the word. Yeah, it's widescreen. It's a
landscape book.
Yeah, it's a landscape book. It's short and it will make me angry when I put it in my shelf.
Yep. Sure. Stick out.
But it complements the art style so well. And there are some amazing pages because of that flat style. The story is interesting because it's a concept piece wrapped inside an engaging character story. Mm-hmm. And it's a sci-fi story wrapped in a more engaging crime story. And the concept is that down the line in the future, everything, all of our secrets are in the cloud. From you know, all the government secrets to our browsing history. And one day the cloud pops and everything is visible for everyone.
Oh dear God.
And all the yeah, government stuff is pretty bad, you know, it's WikiLeaks. But what's even worse is that everybody knows what you searched for that one night. And it destroys everybody's relationship with everybody. So enough time has happened since that happened, like 20, 30 years, and everybody has a secret identity. Everybody goes out on the streets in costumes, and they have a secret identity for their secret identity because they might want a different life from their job life and from their home life and from the other people that they have a secret life from. So the main story follows this private investigator who that job is actually illegal now because the most important thing in the world is privacy. And he gets hired by a woman to do a background search on her because she wants to make sure everything's airtight for her. She wants to get a new job. And lo and behold, she's murdered. And now he's got to solve the crime.
Oh.
It's very, very entertaining. And the really fun part is that there are no police. Police are replaced by journalists. And journalists are the only people who their identity is completely public. And so instead of the FBI, you have CNN. And all the reporters have guns, and they're very incompetent at their jobs. So the PI guy is like, well, I've got to do this now because I'm the only one with talent. So it's just really, really well executed, well constructed. Brian K. Vaughan, in case you didn't have the context, is the guy who did Saga, which is like the single best-selling comic of the past 3 or 4 years. And it's great. I can't recommend it enough.
Awesome. Excellent. Private Eye, it's watching you. All right. Yeah. Well, that's Book Report, and that's our show. But before we go, of course, we play quiz time. This get your quiz hats on, everybody. This week, the quiz questions come from me again.
Woo!
Now, these questions are all fictional TV and radio stations. Now, this is like some comics, but mostly like TV and movies. All right. Number one, actually, no comics, I lied. Well, this first one, there might be, this is a comic, this first one. Okay, number one. Kent Brockman anchors KBBL News on what long-running cartoon series? Cole Hornaday.
Simpsons.
Yes, sir. Number two. Dr. Johnny Fever and Venus Flytrap are just two of the kooky DJs on this Ohio rock station. Cole Hornaday.
WKRP in Cincinnati.
Yes, sir. Number three.
You're going to run this one.
No, actually, that's it. That's all I got.
Wayne's World, Wayne and Garth had their public access show on what Aurora, Illinois channel?
Oh.
They said it at the beginning of every sketch. All right.
Late.
Nobody's going to get it. It's Aurora Cable 10. Right. Number four. KACL Seattle played host to this Boston transplant psychotherapeutic call-in show.
The Frasier.
Yes, sir. Frasier Crane. All right. Number five. In the Mary Tyler Moore Show, Mary Richards produces this station's The 6 O'Clock News in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Cole's holding his head because he knows the answer. I'll give you a hint. It starts with a W.
Thank you. That's not helping me at all.
All right, it's WJM TV. All right, well, that's our show. Thank you for listening. You can find us every week at Perfect Bound Podcast. PerfectBoundPodcast.com. You can email us quiz questions. You can email us anything you want at PerfectBoundPodcast@gmail.com. I read it. I do. If you have a question for Chris or Nicole or Cole, if you like, what did you guys think of this comic? I want to read this comic. Ask that. We'd love to hear from you. Subscribe to us on iTunes or any RSS reader of your choice. Leave us a review if you want. I think we have one or two from friends of ours. And you can see everything Cole Hornaday and I do at the Perfect Bound at the Perfect Bound Podcast. But also, you, Cole, winking at me kind of threw me off.
Sorry.
He's eating these jelly bellies that taste like soap.
I finished my little bag of Star Wars jelly bellies, and I'm ready to move on to the next one.
All right. ThePanelJumper.com. Check it out. And you can come to the Comics Dungeon at 319 Northeast 45th Street here in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Like them on Facebook. That's our show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.